Hello, good evening, welcome. My name is Samuel Trapp. This is Damn Radio. Damn glad to have you. Brought to you tonight by the makers of Scum. Yes, the first ever combined hairdressing and foot ointment. Baldy Gel, the hairdressing that leaves your head so clean you can eat off it. And Ano Gum, the gum that keeps those other cheeks fresh all week long. I hope you like that. I stole that from Monty Python. I used to quote that all the time. People would think it was fairly funny, but I did it without a British accent. At any rate, I'm glad to have you here today. I wanted to get started today with a topic that's been of much interest to me of late. And that is government overreach, government interference in the lives of normal people. I had some discussions with quite a few people over the last week or so, and even more just over the last 2 days. And it's alarming to me. Oh, by the way, if you'd like to call in tonight, I am accepting calls 573-746-8020. And I'd be happy to chat with you. I've got plenty to talk about. Otherwise, if nobody does feel the urge to call, and half the time I ignore phone calls anyway. But we shall see. So if you feel like calling and you got something entertaining to add, perhaps I shall speak with you. That could be good for all, including me. But I have been talking to a bunch of people over the last few days about government overreach and how government is interfering in the lives of normal people. Now, all of you know my story. Well, if you listen to my show, you know my story. You heard on Thursday, I was traveling and I had to do a rerun of a show, and I talked about the Missouri bar, what I call the corrupt Missouri bar, the inactive and obtuse Supreme Court that allows what they did to me to occur. And I know it's happened to other attorneys. I've been trying to talk a couple other ones to come on that would be happy to talk about it. But this, even though it's my show, I try to say it's not all about me. It's not just about, there are so many people that the government is influencing and interfering in their lives. Everybody knows my Machiavelli readings, if listen to me at all, from the past, and that is that government is only supposed to step in and interfere with you if you are affecting the lives of someone else. Government, you know, everybody should be free to engage in what they want to do. And one of the quotes I always talk about from that book and from similar readings, and these are age old, these are long ago, but people talking about government, the need for government, why government exists, how it's a necessary evil, but it is evil, and but it is necessary because you need certain things, and the government should only interfere only to the extent that you grant it. As a society, as you grant it the authority to, and not more. You know, the quote is always, oh, well, I'm free to wander down the street waving my arms and kicking my legs in any direction I want, because by God, that's what God intended me to do, and that is how I enjoy life, and I should be entitled to enjoy life. You have the ability to do the same thing in whatever manner you feel appropriate, waving and kicking and screaming, or not doing so. Do you remember Robin Williams in that show? Man, I wish I could remember the name of it. But anyway, he was a teacher, and I forget what it was, but he was a teacher, and he was teaching kids, and he says, walk around, wave your arms, do whatever you want. And one kid is not moving. He goes, well, I told you, Mr. Whatever, to wander around and move. He goes, I choose not to. He goes, oh, beautiful. You know, and that is beautiful. So the when government gets involved is only at the point where my freedom collides with yours. That's it. And, you know, these are not my thoughts. These are age-old thoughts of other people. And it's time that people realize that government is not the answer. But, of course, in their minds, they think they are. And in their minds, they interfere with you, with whatever you wish to do. And that's because each of them, each of these government actors is creating their own little fiefdoms, you know, their own little kingdoms that they like. And they like to interfere with you. And so, I don't know. I only am giving this little show opener. You know, when government power becomes personal, it's only personal when it affects you. My life has been affected dramatically from when they targeted me as a lawyer for enforcement. And I've told that story repeatedly. You can go back and listen to some of the prior episodes. You can go back and listen to me rail about the Missouri bar and what I believe of their three corrupt processes. The first two that affected me, which is the fee dispute resolution program, which is now the fee dispute resolution committee, which is even worse. The second one is this lawless, and frankly, in my view, somebody should do something about it, but the Supreme Court is too intentionally ignorant to, or they're actually ignoring this program, and it's called the Client Security Fund, and they name it in this deal. It shouldn't be called that. It should be the targeting of lawyers and former lawyers and dead lawyers and incapacitated lawyers is what it should be called, but they don't want to call it that because then it might actually be looked into by something other than the corrupt Missouri bar, who knows all about this. And the third process is something that they like to call the nonpartisan. If you call it nonpartisan, frequently enough, it must be nonpartisan. Judicial selection program committee, now turned into a constitutional amendment, but people won't talk about these, but I talk about them. And so if you haven't heard that episode yet, I say go back and listen to it. It was it's in my internationalflavor.com website. July the 3rd is when I gave that release, that show, whatever you want to call it, that that I broadcast that show, and I went into depth. It's almost 2 hours. It's longer than I normally go. I normally go an hour and a half, and because I'm in studio tonight at Lake Ozark Real Estate of the Art Studio, I actually might go longer tonight just because I feel like it. And well, if I do, actually, no, I won't go longer because I didn't set it to record me further. And I don't want to have to worry about that, so I won't. But I'm in studio, and I'm kind of enjoying it, but I don't know what in the hell I'm doing. So if I, because I always do this remotely, and it's a little bit different, but here I am in the studio, and it's a tiny bit different for me, but I still get it, and I'm glad to be here, and I like it. But I wanted to encourage anybody, because I've spoken to a lot of people and I've asked someone for permission to give a show on a particular topic related to him very quickly. And I told him I wouldn't do it unless he somewhat gave me permission, and so I won't. And there's another person who I've said something similar to as well, and said that, you know, I would like to do a little bit more, to go further, to dive into these problems more deeply, because when I was practicing law, I was nearly an expert on how to go after and attack government. In fact, that's why I think I was targeted by these a-holes, is that they came after me because I was going after government, because I wouldn't help them go after Greg Williams as an attorney. I wouldn't do it. And they lied. They didn't lie. They funneled me information about him. And it's just wrong that government interferes in that way. And I want more of this. And so and I have several topics that I wish to go into, but I wouldn't just broadcast him without at least saying something to the people they are related to if I know them and I want to go deeper. But I'm very much interested in talking about more. And I want to call this little opener I'm going to do, which I'm doing right now, call it the targeted, when government power becomes personal, when they're coming after you, okay? And a lot of us, it doesn't happen to us, but try interfering with what the government does. Try that. And then see what happens, and then jump in. I don't know why somebody is messing with the computer this evening, but I am watching somebody mess with the computer, and I don't like it. So, JR, if you're listening, I don't know if that's you, but I'm not sure it's supposed to be this way. But I can't see what I was looking at before. Anyway, I don't think it's affecting any of the sound quality going out, but it's distracting me, obviously. So I wanted to bring up that if you personally have been impacted by anything government related and you would like somebody, you would like to have a sounding board to talk about it. You would like somebody to commiserate with you, which is me, Samuel Edward Von Trapp the First, as JR calls me. And although I'm just plain old Samuel Trapp in my book, if you would like to, I encourage you to send your information to live@damradio.com or to samuelt@internationalflavor.com. I'd be happy to chat with you remotely or whatever. And you can do it either anonymously or not. Hell, I'll interview you. I don't care. If you got a good government story, and I'm not anti-government. I just think that government is and should be something that is limited. And unfortunately, it's not. And the smaller you get in the government, region or state or local government, the worse the problem becomes, because people get used to being in charge and being unable to be touched because it's hard to fire those people. You can't get rid of them. And that's at most levels. You know, you really got to do something to be targeted and gotten rid of. And so at any rate, if you have stories of government overreach, of government anything, please bring them to me. Missouri lawsuits have come out just in the last year. Okay, there's been civil rights lawsuits, abuses of process. Recent lawsuits in Missouri highlight claims of First Amendment retaliation, excessive force, denial of due process by local government and law enforcement. Small businesses are talking about code enforcement in an excessive nature, and it's coming. You know, there are plenty of them, and it's some of this stuff is local and punches people right in the face. Locally, and I intend to go further into quite a bit of that here before too long. So several small business owners in Missouri, especially in St. Louis County and in Columbia, filed complaints, federal, alleging that they were selectively fined, cited, or shut down during COVID, and they criticized their own local leadership about it. There are whistleblowers who make sunshine law requests under Missouri transparency laws. Me, one of them, in fact, I haven't filed a suit yet, but I have it drafted against the Missouri bar, and I intend to send them a copy and go, hey, why are you ignoring me? You know, it's not been a serious priority in my life, it's getting closer to being that. I remember I told you about my requests for sunshine requests to the Missouri bar, to the Supreme Court of Missouri, and to the governor's office. The governor responded right away, but also responded that I would have my documents by the 18th of July. That day was gone on Friday. I don't have them yet, so I will follow up tomorrow. The Supreme Court answered partially and said, geez, you can't come after us for that. You know, they talked about judicial acts versus administrative acts and claimed that what I was after was judicial, which it isn't. It's administrative. Hiring and firing and appointment of people to committees is not a judicial activity of the Supreme Court. And I challenge anyone to tell me something different. But that's not the case. And at any rate, I am planning to go after the bar, who hasn't even filed any response. They're just exempt. They just ignored it completely. You know, they don't have to follow the law. They are the Missouri bar. And by the way, they are the power in the state. Remember, if you're the ones that appoint the Supreme Court, which they are, then and all the appellate courts and other places like that, then you're untouchable, and they don't want to go after you because why? Because then they might not get your support when they're trying to be a Supreme Court judge, right? So I think it's one hand washes the other. I dislike it, you know. I was having a conversation with someone else on this topic today, and I was like, you know what, I'm very much disappointed in the fact that I have had my license to practice law taken away in such a corrupt and evil manner. I apologize. Not that it was taken away in a corrupt and evil manner. I have no problem with that process, and I have no problem with being, told that it's that I had to be punished. I'm fine with that process. I disagreed with it, you know, and how it went down. But what I'm mainly bitching about is the fact that I have not been able to be relicensed when they relicense felony criminals. First time out, no problem. You know, they don't hold their requests for 26 months or 18 months. They answer them right away. And grant them the ability to go back and practice law. But because I will not admit that I'm a criminal, that I steal or have stolen from my clients, therefore, I'm a bad person. Forgiveness is not to be granted to someone who won't admit that he stole from his own clients. Well, I didn't, and I challenge any client that says otherwise to climb on with me, or any of these Missouri bar a-holes to also get on and tell me where they came up with this, and if they'd be willing to let me dig into their past and send letters to all of their former clients and say, hey, I'll give you some money if you'll say something bad about this lawyer. Former lawyer, I'm sorry. Well, if you want that, and if you agree with that, then you can agree with the Missouri Bar's lawless and corrupt program with how they take care of this. And there are so many other things, and I don't mean to go over too far in this segment some of the stuff that I've already talked about, but government overreach at its finest is known in the Missouri Bar, and they're a bunch of crooks, and they know it. There is no way that a first-year law student wouldn't know better than what these a-holes are doing, particularly in this travesty known as the Client Security Fund. And nobody talks about it because they have a license, and boy, by God, if you talk about it, they'll come after you too. Well, they've already done all they can, well, not all they can. You know, if I end up dead, it's Missouri Bar. You better check into that first, because there are some evil people over there, and they don't want to be questioned. Questioning them, that's tantamount to a death sentence. You don't question those people. The Supreme Court doesn't question them. The legislature absolutely doesn't question them. They don't even respond if you ask them to. And the governor doesn't question them. They are the only branch to regulate themselves completely, and the Missouri Bar regulates the judicial branch. How do you like that? The judicial branch doesn't regulate itself when it comes to the Missouri Bar regulating them, because they only get appointed through the Missouri Bar corrupt process called the nonpartisan, which I don't know why I add that in, but only so you know what I'm talking about, because they won't talk about the judicial selection plan without calling it nonpartisan, okay? So these Sunshine Law retaliations, I'm not alone. They're doing it to other people. I plan to assist other people in filing some what do you call them, sunshine requests as well in the coming weeks. And I've got a few lawsuits drafted for myself on these, going against the Missouri bar, and that I'll try to keep you posted on what's going on there. There have been some notable lawsuits filed, Missouri-based plaintiffs, in 2025. A civil suit was filed by a disabled veteran from Springfield alleging unlawful denial of medical care at the VA and obstruction of the complaint process by federal employees. The suit cites systemic targeting of him after filing grievances. I haven't downloaded that complaint yet, but I probably will. There's been a pro se lawsuit in Kansas City federal court that accused the United States Postal Service and the Department of Justice of blocking freedom of information requests and access and retaliating against the claimant with IRS audits following his own activism regarding police reform. You know, because that's what you do. If somebody questions government, I questioned government forever. And what happened? They came after my law license. Mm-hmm. And they came after it hard. And they targeted me in other ways too. And so I'm not alone. It's happened to other people. And other and you know what? They have something called, I did an analysis for somebody and myself on the concept known as official immunity, which and that's a state level immunity for a person acting in his own or in his representative capacity for the government, as long as he's acting as a representative in the government capacity from civil litigation, he is immune. He has this official immunity for state law claims. That corresponds to something, it's similar, quite similar to something called qualified immunity on the federal level. And on the federal level, qualified immunity and official immunity often get the federal actor off the hook, because these things will never be reformed. They are protections. Remember, you can't sue the state. And this came from way back when. You can't sue the king. You know, you can't. The king is eternal. You know, is the supreme being, basically, in government. You can't go after the king. Well, in Missouri and in the United States, there are all. It's the same concept. There's a governmental immunity. You can't sue the government unless they've carved out exceptions for you to go after them. Now, one of the main ones is under federal law, let's go after the United States Parcel Service again. There's something called the Federal Tort Claims Act, and that federal, you can't. So if you get hit by a United States Postal Service truck, you can't just go sue them in state court. There are all kinds of rules. There are administrative processes that you have to follow because the rules are particular. Now, such is not the same in Missouri if you get hit by a Missouri government-owned vehicle. There's different ways of going after them because they are a government actor. But remember, they're usually immune from suit. One of the carve-outs is torts like car accidents, like things like that. Okay, but there's also, but you can't just sue them without following the rules that allow them to be sued. And a lot of times, they're immune from suit anyway. You might have heard of things like judicial immunity. A judge is immune from suit, just like the government is, for anything done while he's sitting on the bench if it's a judicial act. Now, if he's driving his car and he rear-ends you, that isn't a judicial act, and so, therefore, he can be gone after for that. But he can't be gone. If you think he's targeting you in your divorce matter, you can't sue him and say, "Well, geez, he's made this judgment against me." He has absolute immunity for being a judge, a prosecutor, and this is nonsense in my opinion. But a prosecutor can charge you with a crime with impunity, because he has something very similar for prosecutorial immunity, okay? And then that goes further down the line and gets to your things like official immunity, qualified immunity. I was a mini expert on this while practicing law. Still know quite a bit about it. Might have to take some updates on it, and I do from time to time because I still consult. for law firms frequently. And so I do some work for them. And so I still, you know, keep somewhat fresh, but not for myself. I do it for others. At any rate, I want you to keep track of that. Let's look at the weaponization of bureaucracy. And this one I didn't just limit to Missouri. I looked across it and across the U.S. Agencies like the IRS, the EPA, ATF have been accused of selectively targeting certain individuals or groups, whistleblowers, dissidents, critics of federal or local authority. An example, in Texas and Michigan, lawsuits filed claiming federal agencies conspired with tech platforms to suppress personal business accounts and online speech under the guise of misinformation. Okay, Missouri versus Biden is ongoing. This landmark case from Missouri's own AG's office alleges federal overreach into state speech and surveillance rights, possibly one of the most important free speech cases in decades. So keep your eye on that. And maybe I will for you to do a separate segment on it. I have other topics I want to get to tonight, and because I was not granted the permission to speak about one of the cases that I was going to talk about. So watch next week, because I'm going to do it next week anywho, because it needs to happen, and I will go into that. But I wanted to give him some time to at least prep for it and target it. We've had some discussions on it, and so we'll hopefully come out with something concrete on that in the next week or so, and have a good show for next Sunday all ready to go. Anyway, I would say this to you, if in closing kind of this segment, if you or your small business, you feel like you've been targeted, shut down, cited, investigated, just harassed after standing up to power, whether local or federal, I want to hear from you. You know, we're building a platform. And by the way, it's not just me. Jonathan Hartenstein, big kudos, because he's given us the authority to be ourselves as listeners. Don't just listen to me. Go out to damradio.com/schedule and listen to some of the other voices that are out there, because there are plenty of voices here that are willing to talk, that are willing to stand up for you and for themselves against the overreach of government. These are the times when people actually believe it. A lot of times used to be that people didn't believe in the overreach of government. Oh, no, that's not right. You know, Sam's a criminal. Sam stole from his clients. My ass. Pardon my French, but my ass, no, I didn't. And I will never admit to having done so, just because a corrupt Missouri bar and I don't want to call them ignorant again, but I want to call them a do-nothing Supreme Court, because they don't. They just ignore it. And the Supreme Court of the United States just ignore it. Why? Because it's easier, and because there's a huge benefit to keeping the judicial branch, the legal branch, separate, and, you know, take out the naysayers, take out the voices like me who might say something. And I'm telling you, that if you want to talk about the collection and the holding of tons of power, well, let's talk about bar organizations everywhere in Missouri. I mean, they're experts on how to get away with corruption, how to codify and defend corruption, how to continue, how to destroy people that say something counter to what the standard voices want you to say. They're not part. If they're not part of the club, then they need to be destroyed. You know, you can be a not part of the club and not interfere. But if you interfere and you're not, people say, oh, geez, you have to be in that organization to change it. Nah, if you get into it, that means you're kissing the same rear ends that they are. And you're all just spitballing it and accumulating that power into more. That's what's happening. So, I don't know. I say again, if you wish to, and I haven't created a submission portal for where do you send these, but I would prefer that you just send this information to me via email, either at live at damradio.com. We'll make sure that it gets to me. Or Samuel T at internationalflavor.com. And I think that, you know, I've gone... I suppose I went into an entire segment over that and went a little further than I intended to on that topic. I want to welcome you again to phone in, should you feel the need, or should you have something exciting to talk about. And that would be 573-746-8020. You can send emails to live@damradio.com. I was checking that earlier, and it appeared that there was a buttload of email in there. But not for me. So mine is Samuel T at internationalflavor.com. And that is only for me. I'm the only one that gets a look at it. Now, moving on to a different topic. I want to talk to you about, and I speak about him fairly often. And if you haven't listened to him, perhaps you should. People say similar things about him that they say about me. Putin lover, Trump hater, China lover, Western hater. It's not true. I have listened to him extensively. I listen to others also. And I for this segment about Jeffrey Sachs, I want to do a bit of an in-depth segment over what has come up recently. I listened to, 5 or 6 Jeffrey Sachs appearances just over the past week in various places, okay? In various segments, several hours worth of content. And you know, he's an interesting guy. He is a thoughtful person. And whether you believe him or not, or whether you follow his line of reasoning or not, and I do and don't. Some of the things I don't agree with, but it sounds reasonable. You know what I mean? When someone gives you a point of view and you disagree with it, that's okay. As long as it's not, what I don't like is blind following or blind not following based on who a particular person is or what they are stating, you know? I think that is a mistake, and it shouldn't proceed in that manner. So I'm telling you about some Jeffrey Sachs things. I listened to a couple of them were analysis of what Jeffrey Sachs said, where people are saying opposite or counters to or refinement of his opinions, and I've listened to quite a bit on that, especially with regard to China. And the reason why I say that is because I am not a China expert. I've got my biggest admiration, if you will, for China is very similar to what Jeffrey Sachs has said, and I've said it previously way before I even knew who he was, and I've said this forever. Because I also said it about the Soviet Union, and if you've listened to me long enough, you know what I've said, that the fact is those countries, communist in particular, and one of the reasons you have to respect what they're doing is because they think long-term. They think more than just the next election. And because all we think about is the next election, there is never any long-term planning on the United States front. Doesn't happen. And on the state laws, it's rarely any better. So the fact is, in communist nations, they have plans. They have the communist plan, the 5-year plan, the 10-year plan, the 30-year plan, the 50-year plan. And China's been executing these plans forever and quite well. Okay, and Sachs is aware of that. I'm aware of that. And hopefully anybody that listens to me is aware of that. And so you can complain that we have given away a lot of our capacity to China over the last 50 years, but you can't claim that they haven't been following their own country's trajectory. and in their own manner and following their own plan, regardless of what the United States does to try to dictate, to interfere. We're just another piece on the chessboard. And unfortunately, in America, we're always playing the short game. And most other countries, well, especially in the Russia and the China sides, they're playing the long game. And the more democracy you throw in, the more likely it is that they have a very short trajectory. You know, like even if you're saying right now that the U.S. is on the right trajectory, we'll only be on that trajectory for 4 years. Now, there's a lot of benefit to that also, or to saying why it should be important. I don't know what happened here either, JR, but okay. Very strange. Well, that's just an probably a brain cramp error here. Some a screen goes off. I used to be in the studio, and so it's a little. It's I'm learning on the fly, unfortunately, and so here you go. But let's talk about a couple of things that Jeffrey Sachs went over the weekend. I listened to something called "This Is Why the United States Wants to Stop China." His main argument was that the U.S. is waging a global economic and political war to prevent the rise of China. But the problem with that is we cannot seriously impact the rise of China. It's too far gone. That's my thought process. That isn't what he says. But he's criticizing. He's spending the time to criticize U.S. tariffs, especially under Trump and Biden, and the protectionist reactions to China's manufacturing superiority, because they are superior in manufacturing, certainly. And either way, tariffs are not true economic strategy, okay? And they've also pushed this myth, according to Sachs, that the U.S. is calling overcapacity in China, which is really a foolish word in my point of view, too. Overcapacity, what's that mean? Efficient? They're efficient and can be competitive because they are? Or does that mean they're manipulating the market? The U.S. wants you to believe that they're manipulating the market, but wouldn't we if the situation was reversed? I'm not saying they're not manipulating the market and trying to control it, especially in EVs. I saw a report last week that some 80% of EV batteries and all that are coming completely from China, and that there's very little. You know, they have locked that market nearly completely, and there's not a whole lot that a lot of people can do about that. Now, Sachs was saying, and I found this interesting and enlightening, that he was saying that the U.S. fears not aggression by China, neither militarily or economically. What they really fear is the success that China has had economically, and that it is going to continue. And it is going to continue. The Washington prefers, having global dominance. You know, we prefer, and Trump is fully on board with this. When you talk neocon and you bring up Trump, well, he's fully on board with this. And he's made some more comments about BRICS in the last week or so too, that it's global dominance, and I talk about this probably far too often, because I think that a lot of the thinking in America is still we dominate, we dominate, we dominate, and not there are other countries out there that possibly might be at some point our equal, or at least a competitor of sorts, And think about this. The U.S. sanctions and restricts Chinese tech, okay? Like TikTok. Now, whatever, TikTok, I've been on there. I'm not a big fan. I think it's designed for the younger generation. I'm not that young. I don't mind getting on there and watching some of the cool little dances going on. Or I like watching, and it's really stupid because now they show up all the time and they have these cheerleaders for baseball games on TikTok, and they're all Chinese, and they get, and they do these line dance sort of thing. Wah, 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 wah. And it's just crazy stuff. And then that now the current one is all about AI robots. And so I don't, you look at one and you let it watch all the way through, and suddenly you got 500 more right behind it. And so now I can't get rid of the AI robot, you know, being tickled. So people, they have these real, and it's pretty funny because all the robots are female. Why is that? Are we such pigs, men, that we're ready to buy a robot as our own personal little sex toy? And if that's the case, why aren't women doing the same thing? Because, well, probably because women know they could go out to any bar anytime and go home with a real robot instead of, you know, something you bought. And men just don't want to deal with the aftermath. You know, you probably go pick up a woman, but by the time you get done, it's like, oh, geez, here I am again, stuck. No, I'm kidding. That's I'm just making fun of the continual robot wars that show up, and I find it rather entertaining, if nothing else. Think about the restrictions that we have placed on the company Huawei. Now, when I lived in Qatar, the first thing I did is my boss, because I worked for a company that sold Huawei technology, and they sold Huawei in, what do they call it when you're... So one of our main contracts back then in Qatar, they were building for the FIFA World Cup. They were building all kinds of buildings and building all kinds of stadiums. They were building little mini cities that they were building for the World Cup and for everything else. It's 2015. And it was fantastic to be over there. And I worked for this company that was doing all of the wiring, electronic wiring for electronics, like parking garages where you come in and you show your ID card and that comes in, and all of the low voltage systems, LVE, all of these, which are basically your LAN systems, everything was run by Huawei. And through our company, we were direct link with Huawei. In so contracts would come to me for review between Huawei in China and in Arabic between company, you know, our company and others, and I would review them. They used English as the source and the legal contracts. I couldn't, of course, translate from either one of those. Now I wonder what it would be like with AI and the ability to do that. Maybe it would have, it's a pretty powerful deal the way you, what you can do. But anyway, the limitations on Huawei, after watching this, and we also had as part of our the company that I worked for, we worked with Ooredoo, which Ooredoo is the biggest phone company in the Middle East, at least in Qatar, and many other the countries, but it may not, I know it's the biggest in Qatar, but it might not be the biggest in Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, any of those other nearby places, United Arab Emirates. And but Ooredoo is pretty big, and Ooredoo is basically T-Mobile in the Middle East. And when my boss showed me the Huawei that he had and how far ahead they were of Apple, of Samsung, of everyone else, and said that the U.S. didn't like them because the U.S. couldn't get into the technology, the government, and get government overreach like they could from Samsung and they could from Apple, then that's why the U.S. restricts Huawei, because Huawei won't play ball and give the U.S. stuff. Now, the U.S. turns around and says that's because the Chinese government is in with Huawei. Okay. But why does that make it horror story for us? We don't give a crap. I suppose you might if you had a top secret U.S. government clearance and you had a Huawei telephone. But if you have a Huawei telephone in here and the U.S. can't get them to GPS you because it's a Huawei phone, wouldn't that be something you'd prefer to have? You know, anyway, those are arguments that I don't need to talk about or really care about. But when Sachs was talking about these things, he's bringing these up, and he's talking about the reasons why, in part, it's because of things like TikTok, things like Huawei, things like batteries, and things like Belt and Road initiatives, and all of that that China is doing and is ongoing, and is doing it better than we were. That on the U.S. side, our leaders, if you want to call them that, and I'm doing it in quotes, you know, the little Death Star, like what's his name, the spy would do, it's Ray, Death Ray, or whatever, I can't remember, Mike Myers. Anyway, is that they are actually, these countries and other, and China especially, is doing it better than the West was. And so Trump is coming out more and more vocal, and according to Sachs, and I've said some of these same things, that he's actually speeding the move toward, especially toward BRICS, okay? There was another one that this one quoted a few of the comments from Sachs, but it's more along the lines of BRICS. This was called BRICS takeover in the Western Empire, you know, and I'm truly involved in this in some small respects, because I'm a mini expert on BRICS. And every time I hear Trump come out and say these ridiculous things that we need to tariff everybody against BRICS, and anybody that's going to get out of the dollar, and, you know, is going to, you know, we're going to target them. It's the exact same thing. It's we're dominant, and we're supposed to dominate, so there's no way there can be an alternative power structure. We don't agree with anything that isn't dominated completely by us. And so when you say things like that, all you're doing is speeding the dash toward the alternative, both in dollar de-dollarization efforts and in getting rid of the hegemony, because you don't want to be sanctioned, right? And so in this, what's his name? Sachs and I are very similar in thought processes. His comes a little bit different. Like, he claims the U.S. overuses dollar and military power as tools. I say the dollar has always been that way, and that, you know, these systems and these sanctions are requiring people like China, people like Russia to, well, see, this is exactly what we're talking about. As soon as we say something that doesn't agree with the U.S., they don't honor us as a separate society. They don't honor us as a sovereign nation of our own. And by the way, smaller countries everywhere else, look at this, because if they're willing to do it to us, what are they gonna do to you? If you stand up, well, we're saying join us. And it's creating the exact opposite effect. When Trump gets up and screams about, oh, geez, we're going to, anybody who de-dollarizes, we're coming after. It's like, man, I better de-dollarize even faster. And that's what's happening. BRICS is growing in power and is offering sovereignty, your own sovereignty. We're not telling you who you need to be. We're offering cooperation and economic partnership on a multipolar setting. We have this this cooperative model that we're ready to use. And the U.S. doesn't want cooperation. They want control. And they're going to get that control by sanctioning Huawei, by sanctioning Russia, by tariffing anybody who chooses not to use the dollar. And all that's doing is people like Africa, Latin America, Asia, these developing countries, they're saying, well, that makes sense to us, you know. It's how hard is it to understand this? I don't think it's that difficult. I really don't. And it's not that, how do I, maybe this would be a better way to put it. I thought I had a somewhat of an epiphany, because I always say that the U.S. isn't going to be a dominant force for, and in fact, in Sachs' initial statement on that hour and a half lecture that he was giving, his very first statement was, you know, the U.S. has been around for 500 years, basically, has been the top dog, right? Has been the top dog on the planet for realistically, 400 or 500 years, right? And, you know, they're not, their time is getting closer and closer to the end, okay? But I like to say it like this. It's not that America, we're not in decline. We are not. I mean, we have so much to be positive about, so much to be proud of, all of this. But other countries, and a lot of them, are catching up. The fact is that equality is not something America really wanted. And now we're seeing other countries are having options. Other countries are able to say, we don't need you. You know, you want to call us a third world backward country? Screw you. You know, we'll join somewhere else. You know, we don't need to beg you for money that all you do is come in and steal our resources. And, you know, what do we get out of the deal? We get domination of you. We get you telling us what we must do because you're the only people with the right answer. BRICS doesn't require that, does it? China's not requiring that. China's not going out trying to dominate the world, at least not overtly. They're doing it by offering partnerships. They're doing it by actually offering a new world order that doesn't require you to kiss the ring of the U.S. to get the money, to join the IMF, to you know, beg to the World Bank, to input austerity efforts into your own country, because otherwise you can't get a loan. You know, you can't do it. And there is no partnership. There is dominance and control. But China allows you to maintain your position and helps you economically to build a port, which helps you both economically. The U.S. is way behind in those efforts, and we haven't really, we don't see it anymore. You know, we don't see the point. We still want to talk about how dominant we are, how great we are compared to the rest of the world. And you know, I like to think that's true. I want to believe that. I want to believe that, you know, that we, with cooperation, can develop, I don't know what, a working group with the rest of the world that isn't necessarily dominated by us. You know, I don't know. I find it very interesting. I think you should go and listen to Sachs. Although this last week he called, he basically tore into what Trump said. He calls him disaster. He called him worse than a clown. Now I think that's way too far. And he criticizes Biden, you know, also, but he's blaming Trump for getting rid of some of these institutions. I don't blame Trump. I think that needs to happen. Now, there was a ruling this past week. A federal judge declared that Trump has to pay for Voice of America and Voice of Europe, or whatever it is, free Radio Free Europe, or whatever it's called, that he has to fund it. And I think it'll be overturned, you know, eventually. And here we are again with activist judges. And the guy, I read the judgment or the ruling, and it's completely political. All of it. You go and you read it, it's like, well, Trump is just a bad guy. You know, he's the the government, through these organizations, has helped get the word out about America for years and years and years, and now he's terminating it. Well, they're corrupt, and they're so biased. When we're the, I mean, there are things that are, you know, I don't, and Sachs, in some respects, goes to that side. He's saying that he's hollowing out these institutions that have been around forever, charitable and otherwise, media outlets and otherwise, that are similar to this in stopping the funding. He says that Trump is weaponizing tariffs and politicizing foreign policy. Well, foreign policy should be political. And he's putting crazy slogans like America first. Well, what's wrong with America first? Every other country should be, you know, Brazil first, Russia first, China first in their own policy. Why shouldn't we be America first? That doesn't mean we should tariff the hell out of everybody. And I got my own disagreements with some of the tariffs, but only because of the effect they might have. Not because they work or don't work, but because in many respects they're going to be just like the sanctions that have not worked. And I think that economically, not necessarily the smartest of plans, but I can be proven wrong. I'm not totally against them. You know, it depends. There can be reasons for it, but each one should be considered individually. And Trump's blanket tariffs, just because somebody's a BRICS country or not, I think is a bit extreme. You know, that's a bit too far to go. And I don't know. The other criticism of Trump by Sachs is that, you know, he talks about both parties and he throws Trump just in the same side with all the Republicans and all the Democrats too, is saying they're both corrupt. They're both captured by the military-industrial complex, and, you know, the structural rot of America and American democracy and foreign policy means there are no serious advocates for peace around the world from the American side. And I happen to agree with that. You know, the other thing I wanted to mention today on this particular topic, and Sachs and his analysis of what's going on economically and BRICSily. that's a new word. I just created a new word. BRICSily, BRICSishness, is that Trump said something over the last few days. Was it Thursday, Friday? I don't remember. But he said that BRICS is fading fast, and that it was a funny quote. I thought about pulling it up, but it doesn't really matter. If you want to find it, go out and look at it. He was, as usual, getting interviewed while getting into his helicopter or plane. And he said something about how wonderful he is, you know, which is typical from the old Trumpster, going, "Oh, I'm just amazing. Look what I did. I told people that I was going to sanction anybody that got into BRICS." And his words, "Now BRICS is fading fast." They had a meeting the next day and nobody went. I strongly disagree with that statement, because it's not what happened. They had the same old meetings they were gonna have, and they had the same old stuff that they and Trump affected nothing, and it's zero. You know, it's he says that he's affecting what's going on with the war in Ukraine. He's affecting the economically what's going on in Europe. All true, you know, but on BRICS, he says they are internally fracturing, you know, that they're done, and the, you know, Western media is saying it's over. I don't think so. It's BRICS, you know, I have some skepticism too, but BRICS has been on a steady growth track for years. It's not getting any smaller. It's getting bigger, and I'm optimistic on what is going to happen with BRICS. Only time will tell. But Trump saying that he's personally destroyed it and it's over. Talk about an advertising point. for Trump himself, you know, I'm wonderful. I've destroyed it. And, you know, see you later, BRICS. But why? Because you said it's going to be a 10% sanction on somebody. If anything, it's going to have the opposite effect per Samuel. You know, that's me, by the way, Samuel Trapp. T-R-A-double-P, by the way, when you're spelling that. Like Mousetrap, but two P's is how I like to say it. And just remember to get it correctly, to get it correct. But if you're sending me an email to samuelt@internationalflavor.com, the necessity of spelling out trap is negated. You don't have to do that. All you have to do is know how to spell Samuel. And by the way, Samuel, just for those of you who wonder, is not with an A. Who would spell Samuel with an A? S-A-M-U-A-L. No, no, no. S-A-M-U-E-L is how that is spelt, with a T on the end. I wanted to go into one more topic for this evening, and I hope you find this one as interesting as I do. I, for years, have watched Russian TV, Russian political channels, Russian movies, you know, Russian language, by the way. And there's a gentleman, and he's passed away now, but he was a very vocal and entertaining person. And I wanted to do, and I've been meaning to do it for a long time, and I finally had some time to sit down and do a somewhat of a summary on this guy. His name is Vladimir Zhirinovsky, okay? And Vladimir Zhirinovsky is a guy who ran for president in Russia repeatedly, many times, never won. He's a political commentator of stellar capacity. He was, I believe, a member of the State House. You know, he did get into that, and he also is a guest lecturer on many campuses for young people, many political channels. Whenever you find him, you can expect something entertaining, something dramatic. There's in Russian, there were quite a few of his where when the Ukraine war started in 2014, he was always on a couple of these programs, and he has no fear of his own opinions, and he usually backs them up. Well, nowadays, in some of his famous predictions, I'm going to outline for you because they came absolutely true to the letter. And then there are others that came close, but not quite. And of course, he's had some that were just completely off. But the ones that he has gotten right are just wow. And he talked about quite a few of these things. And I want to go over quite a few of them. Some of his predictions and what he said. And remember, I also wanted to go into his youth and upbringing, but I really don't think I'll go that far. It doesn't matter, because he's a Russian politician and spokesperson, and he gave speeches and writings, and he had an eccentric but prophetic view of Russian politics and Russian culture. And he was extremely gifted, in my opinion. And when you listen to him, he's entertaining. Kids loved him. I think when he died, he was 75. He'd been around for a very long time, and he had been his own person that entire time. He beat to his own drum. Nobody controlled him, and you've got to respect some of the things that he said. So, a little bit of a breakdown, okay? And one of them in particular is on Ukraine, okay? Speaking about Ukraine, and he's talked about it forever, and there are multiple documents he put out on this and his predictions. He made predictions about 2024. He made predictions about Zelensky. He made predictions about the United States. He made predictions about Obama. He made predictions about Trump. But in Ukraine, as early as 2008, in speeches that he gave, he predicted war in Ukraine because he, and you listen to these, and oh my God, the fact that it was six to depending on how you calculate when this war started, in 2007 and 2008, when he was talking about this, the war didn't start till 2014, and the U.S. didn't acknowledge that it started, or the West didn't acknowledge that it started until 2022, right? And even then, they denied it for the first year of the war. But the war started in 2014. Well, Zhirinovsky was talking about it from 2007-2008, and he claimed that the U.S. and NATO were baiting Russia into a conflict over Crimea and Donbass, which are essentially Russian territories. And he talked about it the whole time. There's a long lecture he gave to in 2011. And I've listened to that thing twice, and I listened to it a couple of weeks ago just because I thought it was, and I was driving somewhere and it was a long drive, and so I listened to old Zhirinovsky. And he was talking about how the Soviet Union under Stalin, under Khrushchev, and under one other, I forget who the last one was, that they Andropov, I don't remember, but they expanded the territory of Ukraine. And shouldn't have, because ethnic Ukraine was never east of the Dnieper River, Dnipropetrovsk, and all of those cities. Everything east of the Dnieper River, just like I've always said, is that those were historic Russian cities. And historic Russian language. Now, remember, Ukraine means, they say na Ukraina, which is on the edge. It's basically, Ukraina is the frontier. But it's a direct statement. Na krayach, it means Ukrayach. They're both the same thing. It means frontier, basically. And so the Russian peoples, and by the way, that included places like Poland, Lithuania, Latvia, everything over that way. And Ukraine was one of them, Ukrayach, and na Ukraina. They're in Ukraine. But they're in the frontier. They were Russian Slavic, but they spoke, in a lot of respects, Ukrainian. A lot of respects, Polish, Latvian, Lithuanian, but they were under the czarships, the princedoms of Russia. They were part of the Russian Empire, but they were other parts. But east of the Dnieper River, it was all Russia. So Zhirinovsky talking about this as early as 08, and he's like, listen, the Crimea, Sevastopol, the Black Sea, the Russian fleets, even in Odessa, all of that has been Russia for generations. And that's true. And Russian-speaking, mostly. And Russian-dominated, absolutely. And so him saying that this prediction, these wars, and he talked about in this 2011 lecture to this college group, was that, listen, this has been going on since Turkey wanted to attack Sevastopol and Crimea. The Polish, with the support of NATO, wanted to come in from the east before World War II. And the same happened from the north, from England, that they were going to come around and come at Russia from the north. And that was part of the strategy of World War II. Now, I've heard that, but not in as detail as much as he put out before in his 2011 statement. And he's talking about this, and he says, if you understand history, you understand that they've been trying to get rid of Russia and Russian imperialism and Soviet communist Russia after that, and then Russia now, since 1991, it's still the same battle going on for 100 years. You know, we're in the same place we were 100 years ago. They still want to dominate and hold down Russia, and they're trying to do it in the same manner. And he predicted that this war in 2008, he said it will start in 2014. Sure enough, it did. He predicted after 1991 that Crimea would return to Russia, which he predicted after the Crimea was part of Ukraine. And he had said all through the 90s that, you know, Crimea will return to Russia. It's a Russian-speaking place. And it happened in 2014. They did their referendum, and that's where he said the same thing about Donbass. The 2022 invasion prediction, and I listened to this, he said, here's his specific statement, at 4 a.m. on February the 22nd, you will feel what's going to happen. And the full-scale invasion by, if you know, the West likes to call it that, by the Russian forces into Ukraine happened on February 22nd, 2024. So a lot of people credit him with having the exact date right of what would happen. Now, he also said that Ukraine will not exist as a country by the end of this war. And initially, he said by 2024. But later, he said it'll be after 2024. That the war ends, and after that, Ukraine won't exist anymore. Now, that still remains to be seen, and he's passed away, so nobody can ask him to clarify. But he also forecasted there won't be any presidential elections in Ukraine for a very long time, and predicted the incorporation of the other oblasts, regions, Kherson, Zaporizhia, Odessa, Dnepropetrovsk, into Russia. You know, and he's... You know, here are now four. He started with just Donbass and Crimea before that, but he also said, you know, Zaporizhia and Kherson are also going to be part of Russia, and they are, and that's where we are. He critiqued Zelensky as a comedian born in the crooked horn. Now, that's the exact translation, but what it really means is Zelensky was a comedian, but he was born in the city of Krivoy Rog. Krivoy Rog means crooked horn. So I think when they translated this for the show that they were listening to, the person who was talking about it just got it wrong, you know, because he didn't understand that Krivoy Rog is birthplace of Zelensky, that he was not born of a crooked horn. He was born in the city of Krivoy Rog. And so somebody jacked that up, but it was just a bad translation, which is okay. But he predicted that Zelensky will be the last president of Ukraine. And so those are most of his predictions, if you will, about what happened in or what will happen in Ukraine. There are more that are somewhat entertaining to listen to, but he also talked about NATO and Western collapse and some of the predictions that he has had over the years. He predicted way back in the 90s that NATO will expand to Russian borders. And he predicted that in the 90s. And now NATO's in Finland. NATO was trying to get into Ukraine. NATO has expanded how many times? Since 91, like nine times, something like that. And, you know, when he talks about the West, or when he talked, you know, he is dead now, but when he talked about the West, it was always with dead certainty that everything that they did in the 90s, and I knew this too, because I was a participant in arms control, diplomatic passport, all of those other things, and I watched what the hell we were doing. And I didn't believe that we were going to stop any of these incursions, bringing in other countries, you know, into NATO and then expanding. You know, here we are, one of the biggest military presences of the United States is where? In Poland. That was never supposed to happen. And we have more military members in Poland than we do in Germany. Incredible. And we did that. So we've expanded to get NATO as far east as possible. And, you know, we wouldn't have stopped. If we got away with what was going to happen in Ukraine, you know, people like Lindsey Graham, all they did was miscalculate Russia's resolve in this area, in this anti-NATO, anti-quit. You know, we have a red line, and that red line is Ukraine. Basically, that red line should probably be the Dnieper River, but, you know, that we can talk about that or agree to disagree on that, whether it's really Ukraine. But Ukraine, whether it's going to be a part of NATO or not, you know, he sees NATO as a trigger, and he talked about this quite a few times. And I hope that this is not the case, but he sees, has always saw NATO as a trigger for a new great war starting in Ukraine. And, you know, he said that Russia, he always talked about this, is that Russia needs to make sure its strategic weapon forces are dominant and well-prepared, and we don't liquidate. You know, he predicted that they would, that the West would back out of the arms control treaties, which we did. He predicted all these things. He could see them, and he kept on going. He said that the collapse of the euro, he has talked about that, or repeatedly. He talked about the euro to be, abandoned by both Italy and Germany. And that, now, one of the ones that didn't come true was specific about the U.S., and it was specific about Trump. He recognized that there was something going on with Trump even back before Trump was first elected. And he, I have heard reports and seen things where he said that Donald Trump would win and then they'd take the election away from him and there wouldn't be elections at all in the U.S. in 2024. It won't happen because American electorate, the way it is now, won't exist, is what he said. Now, he's wrong on that, but he was right about a lot of the things that he said about the Trumpster in some of those. His predictions that he passed out about BRICS and about multipolarity. And this was, now, part of this was as they were still developing. And he never was a fan of China. And a lot of Russians really aren't. They would prefer to be friends with the United States. They really would. A lot of Russians think highly of Americans, and they think pretty highly of Trump. Okay, now there's some problems with it recently, especially with Trump going, you know, all out and saying, you know, that he's going to, you know, fix Trump. This stuff about bombing of Moscow that's come up, and I don't know how true it is, and I've seen a lot of commentary on it, but I didn't want to really mention it because I haven't gone deep enough to find, to get what I believe about it. I've only seen a couple of discussions in Russian from the other side, and I haven't seen anything from the American side, so I don't want to talk about that just yet, but allegedly, they're supposed to be, and last night, Kiev sent over 90-something drones into Moscow, so they're attacking Moscow, and allegedly, if Trump gives them these missiles that he's claiming, they're going to start firing into Russia with missiles and not just these drones, okay? And so Russia is bombing the snot out of Ukraine every single night with missiles and drones in an effort to wrap this up sooner rather than later. And Zelensky is on his heels, according to a lot of things over the weekend. And Zhirinovsky predicted that Ukraine wouldn't exist. We'll have to see about that and see what finally comes up to this. But I wanted to get to what his thoughts were on BRICS and multipolarity. I started with the Russia-China cooperation, which he was for, but not to the extent that he would be for a Russia-United States cooperation. Not through Europe or the EU, but direct cooperation between America and Russia. Now, I've always seen this as extremely positive if that were to occur. And frankly, when I was in the military and held a diplomatic passport after the collapse of the Soviet Union, I thought that's where we were going. But Clinton, Bush, all of them cocked it all up and needed, and all the neocon BS, we still needed that enemy so that we could continue to weaponize the entire world. And so we kept Russia. We didn't help them remotely after we finalized the destruction of the Soviet Union. We instead went and tried to buy them out and treat them like another third world country instead of trying to make them a partner. And that, unfortunately, is the U.S.'s style. That's what we do. We are colonialists in that regard. Money. We are money bandits and colonialists. And that's why BRICS and multipolarity, at least according to Zhirinovsky, is far more important to the world than American colonialism, because we've watched it go on between the two countries for a long time, particularly after the collapse of the Soviet Union. But he did believe that global trade will eventually shift to between Russia and everyone else, to ruble-based transactions when people are dealing with Russia, not dollars. And that is absolutely true. And he's been saying that since the early 2000s, before talks of what was going on with BRICS, before the fact that literally 90% of all trade between China and Russia last year in the $270 approximately billion dollar mark was done by the ruble or the yuan. And unbelievable that he was correct about that. Now, he has always, or did always, advocate for the rejection of both dollar dominance and yuan dominance, saying that each country, including the EU, which should break up and quit using, a common currency, which England did, and he predicted, which he also said that Italy and Germany would go the same route and use their own currencies before too long. But he's always rejected a dollar and yuan-based dominance, saying that countries are stronger, and this is true, they are, if they use their own currency and trade in their own currency. And I've talked about this forever, that the U.S. has been able to dominate because we controlled the SWIFT bank system and the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund, all of which was led by the West and backed by New York dollars. Not so anymore. And, Zhirinovsky predicted that as well. The guy was a prophetic sort of guy. He had a prophetic style. He was fairly accurate. He talked about Obama, said in 2004 that the U.S. would elect a black, Muslim, one-legged president. Now, obviously, unless they did very good touch-up on camera, I've never met him personally, but I believe Obama to have two legs, and so he must have missed that if he was talking about the black Muslim and the one-legged president. He missed that boat by one-third. He didn't get there. He definitely talked about, in 2008, Lugansk and Donetsk, that's the Donbass. He said that Ukraine would bomb the hell out of their own oblasts and eventually Russia would step in. He predicted that back in 2008, and that occurred in 2014 with the bombing, and Russia finally stepped in 2024. Because the war was going on in Donetsk and Lugansk since 2008 between Ukraine and the places that wanted to be Russian, which was Lugansk and Donetsk. He talked about partial mobilizations, and he talked about the fact that that would be more than just the 200,000 that were activated every year of young men that were not real mobilization, but are people who are, they call them conscripts. And he talked about that for the Ukraine war, when it started, there would be some mobilization. He got that right. And I don't know. I think he was a damn interesting guy. I wish I could go. He's not, it's obviously not entertaining to listen to these things in Russian for anybody, but you can find other topics on him, and you can find some English programs. There are a couple. If you go out and look up Vladimir Zhirinovsky, if you have any of that interest, you can go back and review it. I think that there hasn't been anything too dramatic in the news these past couple of days, and I haven't spent a great time going through the news from any particular source. Let me do a quick group of what we have. Boris Johnson has said that the Brits are losing interest in Ukraine. Let's see. A German general has urged Ukraine to strike Russian airfields again, hopefully using German Tauruses and whatnot. The Western demonization of Russia, Russiagate, is just the tip of the iceberg. That's an interesting article, which I've already read. It's a couple of days old, but it's too long to fit in tonight. Can't do it, but maybe this week we'll look at some of the things that we are going to talk about. I wanted to go back to my initial thought process on tonight's show about government overreach and some of the things that I do plan to get to this week. I definitely plan to get to my own story about the Supreme Court, my sunshine requests to the governor, the Supreme Court, and to especially the Missouri Bar. My lawsuits drafted to go out, especially against the Missouri Bar. But what I will probably do, especially with regard to the Missouri Bar, is draft the suit and send it over to the bar and see if that will prompt someone to respond. I doubt it, because they haven't responded at all. And we shall see. Maybe they think they're immune. We shall see. Plenty of news. There's another story about whether Peter the Great was the Antichrist or not, which could be interesting. I don't know that we'll get into that all the way. But there's several cool opinion pieces that I've spoken about. that I would like to talk about some more. But tonight's show is winding down. I have been in studio. I believe there are a few things that I'm just not used to using in the studio, and I will hopefully be better at it. I plan to be in studio again tomorrow, and we might be able to talk about Zhirinovsky's ghost a little bit more and some of the things about that, whether the U.S. is really in decline or whether everybody else is just catching up, and things of that nature. I would encourage you to go to damradio.com/schedule to pick up anything related to our other programs and see who is coming up for you. I get to be one of the first shows of the week, which is fantabulous for me, and I like, but there are plenty of other ones for you to listen to. I encourage you to go to internationalflavor.com and pull up my prior shows, particularly the one regarding bar corruption, which I think people need to review and check out. It's going to be an interesting week for us. Lots of news coming up. Lots of good stuff. Please join us tonight and every night from 9 to 10:30 on International Flavor. Have a very good night.